right, great. Tony, what do we got on the agenda so far?
What I have, one thing about, since we'll soon finish the keys by the first week in September, what we will do next.
Okay.
That's one question. And then, like, donations. I was interested because I'm starting my group in a new location at a church, and they like donations for being able to use the space. And so I also wanted to be able to have donations for the monastery, so wasn't sure how to handle that.
Okay.
And then one thing that came in just recently, Alex mentioned that the two latest posts of the conference call recordings was not working. So I don't know if there's anything to talk about on the call, but
that's... I'm not sure either. We're missing our tech guide, but
okay.
Yeah. You know what? Why don't we hold that one, Tony, and handle it offline? We have
okay.
to copy it back next week.
Okay. Okay. Great. So that's what I have. I don't know if there's anything else anybody else has.
Are there other things that people want to have on the agenda?
This is Lynette. I may have missed this, but is there an official document that we can post somewhere to start new key groups?
Not quite, actually.
Okay.
You mean like a flyer?
Yeah.
No. It, if
or the news art. I mean, there was a paragraph for a while, and I didn't know if it was ever approved.
Yeah, well, it's not yet. Is the
okay.
answer. We're doing a restructuring of the program, and we've been waiting on that. Hopefully by next week, we have a call. I think it's next Friday. Is that right?
Yes, the 13th.
Yeah, I think we'll be able to put the final pieces in place with the new structure we're looking at by next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, and then I think things will start flowing after that. We do have the flyer, actually, and it's done. And we also have the web write-up. We're collecting information from people to make sure to get all the groups on the web, but we need this other structure in place before we can implement all that. So hang on for one more week, maybe a little
okay.
more. Melinda.
Well, I just wondered the point Tony was making about we're about to end the key, whether we're going to go back and start over again, which seems like a good idea, but I don't know if any of those flyers are key specific.
Yeah, so we'll address stuff like that when we... get into the next phase of the program. Anyone else with an agenda item? Okay, good. Well, I have an idea for an exercise that might be fun. So let's do those first couple things. So the key, I think we deserve some congratulations on this. To make it through that entire book of one or two pages at a time, that's pretty amazing. What should we do next? I'll start us off. You know, one thought I had is that what you're seeking is causing us to seek, since that was the next book, and it is the same kind of book. Another idea, the How Workbook would be an interesting thing to do. It would be a different kind of thing because it's actually exercises. I don't know if that kind of fits in with the key program. And, you know, pretty much anything else we want to do that's out there. But those are the thoughts I had.
Okay,
or we could do the key over again. Amy.
I like the idea of pointing that which you are seeking. Yeah, I third that. And I think it was the second, I'm not sure, but I think it was the book that came after the key.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. It's a good one, too. Yeah, it's my favorite, too. Alex just said it was his favorite. Michael?
To throw into the mix how to get from where you are to where you want to be, I was thinking about it is it would be kind of like meatier, lengthier readings. And so it would be kind of more like an article type thing. So you'd read, it seems like you'd need to read more. And it might make for different types of discussions. It might just be different.
Okay, that's an interesting idea. What about folks out there? any thoughts on our next move?
This is Lynette. I just picked up off my shelf That Which You Are Seeking, and you know, it's been a while since I've read it, and they are kind of meatier, longer passages, very much so.
Oh, and That Which, or do you?
Yeah, and That Which. I mean, you know, it's you know the con. I mean, it's not just one or two line pages.
Oh, okay. It's a little more text on the pages. Okay,
yep.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is Michael.
Michael?
I love There's Nothing Wrong With You.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think probably I love it too. That's probably the one we would not do for sure, just because we have a retreat on that topic and we do other stuff with that work. I feel pretty confident that would not be a good idea. I think pretty much anything else is up for grabs, though.
Okay. Got it.
Alex?
Dave, it's Rebecca.
Rebecca?
When I first started, we did Trying to Be Human, and we would kind of pass the book around and each read a paragraph or so, and then we would have the facilitated discussion. And I just remember that being so incredibly beneficial and broad for kind of a brand new practitioner. So I don't know. I just want to put that one out there.
That's very interesting, Rebecca. That's actually kind of a good attitude of mine. Good thing to consider is because we know from our experience that it has quite an effect what we're putting out in front of people. And so if they, you know, so we might consider what is going to be the most supportive and helpful for folks who are new to practice, because a lot of folks are in that boat in their groups.
Mm-hmm.
So Trying to Be Human sounds like it might fall in that category. Amy.
I like That Which You're Seeking, and I also like the idea of either Trying to Be Human or Sweet Zen. The group I attended for a long time before coming to the monastery used readings from both of those books, and it had an impact on me.
Well, that's a good advertisement for it. So I can't remember the difference between those two books. Anybody remember? Yeah.
They're essentially the same thing. They're talks that, well, not talks, but they're excerpts from groups that Sherry did, and Sarah put them together into short little passages. And I know Trying to Be Human is the main reason why I ended up at the monastery. So it is a very dangerous one. If Amy is claiming that that one had a big impact on her too.
Yeah, we might. That might be a good way to fill up the place. It sounds like.
Dave, this is Penny, and I'd put in a vote for Trying to Be Human also.
Is that right? Okay, I'm going to have to reread that. It's been years.
Dave, this is Nikki, and I would vote for Trying to Be Human or Sweet Zen, both of those, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, just because, you know, they're sort of, you know, given some of the comments that have been made already, they're kind of a middle way between The Key and That Which You Are Seeking.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not as much to read each time, and even if they are a little bit longer, they're not as
They're not as hard to grasp, maybe.
They're not as hard to grasp. Yeah, That Which You Are Seeking can sometimes, for me, get a little bit kind of heady and a little bit harder to follow. But the other two just, you know, because they each of them are kind of a topic in a way, and they sort of can grab in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that which is high level. I mean, that's why I like it, is because it likes like that. But that also might make it not the best choice for this. Alex?
My experience with Trying to Be Human is that it's very down to earth, and it's like tells us almost like a story. They're almost like parables in a way. Like Sherry will just make a decision. She will tell a story as she's describing something in order to make her point. You know, like the comments about staying in a place and digging in one place is in there. There's also something about you're seeking out to learn how to do ballet, you can either get a book or you can go to a teacher in New York. You know, it depends on how you want to do it. And how into it you want to get. So It's just little things like that.
Okay, that's very interesting. Any other points of view before we move on? Alex has another point of view. Hang on.
Well, there's one more thing. This keeps floating through, so I'm just going to bring it up. It might be a little bit more prohibitive, but the unconditional self-acceptance CDs, like Sherry will do a, she'll talk about a topic, and then there'll be exercises where she'll do guided imageries and little writing exercises. And I thought that maybe one or two of those, or three, paired together might make a great introduction, and people do the exercises, and then the facilitator says, what do you notice?
Okay, that's interesting, too. That's a lot more high level. Michael,
hey,
I saw your hands a minute ago. Did you have something, or did it pass? No. There's somebody else out there, too. Didn't catch you.
Tracy?
Tracy.
Yes. The unconditional self-acceptance idea I really love, and I actually kind of worked the CDs with some friends a while back, and it's pretty high level. And I think what came to mind when Alex mentioned that was if there could actually be like an option that we might, you know, have an opportunity to do like a half day, like offer a half day workshop for people, that we could do something like unconditional self-acceptance and do, you know, the first CD and just try something different. Because I have a feeling that doing a half-day something might actually attract some new people. When there's this, like, weekly ongoing thing, it just might attract a different person.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. We've talked about that, and the way we've talked about it is to do something like that in a way that would work for the monastery would be to have to create something, the same thing that everybody does, or certain people do, whoever was interested and qualified. So, yeah, we could definitely consider that.
Is it Jen?
Hey. Jen.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say the part that Alex was talking about in trying to be human about the studying ballet or whatever, that was, I don't know, maybe I stopped before it took me to the monastery, but I know that that was the place where I committed to practice in the most serious way to kind of say, like, this is the path that I am not going to stray from, and I just, yeah, I would speak, you know, speak to that, the power of that book for sure. So
yeah, that's amazing. Don't read it again, Jen.
I know. I must have tucked it away after that, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want to end up here, then read it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is Marie.
This is Chris.
Marie.
Yeah. This isn't really a new perspective because I agree with what most everyone else has said. But, you know, I really love the idea of using Trying to Be Human or Sweet Zen because, yeah, to me those were really, really powerful books early in my practice. And I have read Sweet Zen continuously since it was published.
Is that
and
right?
I love that book. And I can read it. Every time I read it, it's just, I feel like I see, more and more and more. And I like the idea of having readings that are a little bit longer because I do think it would, and kind of the style of those books would probably be really helpful to newer people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the sense I'm getting, too. It sounds like it's very accessible.
Yeah, and the key was wonderful, too, but sometimes those are so short and so to the point, you know, that it's, I think, a little hard sometimes for newer people to have a lot to say about them, but this sounds really exciting.
Well, boy, yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Chris.
was wondering, doing something like having an exercise from the How You Do Everything is How You Do Anything workbook or something along those lines, so that maybe every third or fourth time we might have some kind of a different kind of an exercise, one that would be like what Alex was describing, where you would have some maybe a little guided imagery or something like that. People would do a little writing and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, if it was something that I think that's a neat idea. There's a training aspect in that that's a little bit challenging to orchestrate long distance. But if it came straight out of the How workbook, you know, those aren't guided imageries. Those are actual exercises. It could even be, you know, we photocopy the pages and hand them out to the people in the group, or maybe not. Maybe we could just walk through them. But I could potentially see that working. And I hadn't actually thought of doing it every once in a while and sprinkling it in. That's kind of a nice idea. Do other people think that's a good idea?
that breaks it up, and if it especially if people are unprepared, it's very fun.
Dave, this is Phil.
Phil.
And I think it's a really good idea. Yeah, and I love Sweet Zen and Trying to Be Human too. I just think they're absolutely fantastic. And to put how you do anything is how you do everything exercise in there, I think would really make it quite interesting.
Okay, good. All right, well, that was a very profitable conversation. We're going to need to get some guidance about this, and so I'll take steps to do that. It might take a little while because the team, you know, Sherry's in Africa right now. But so anyway, good. We've got till, see, when's the first week that this is going to apply?
Well, the key, last we will finish the key the week of September 4th.
Just all like right, well, spring. we better get on it. Okay, good. All right, Tony, so the donations predicament is that they're asking, the church is asking for a donation rather than a fee.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And I told him, I said, well, right now, you know, it's just me and two or three other people, so it's not going to be a whole lot. And they're okay with that. But I thought, you know, well, I'd also like to be able to ask for a donation for the monastery, so I didn't know quite how to go about all of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Maybe people would have some good ideas. I mean, I could see a couple ways to go just off the hip is to ask them to set a fee just so we know. Give them half what comes in. I don't know. Any other thoughts about this from anybody? Or maybe somebody else has been in this situation and has some experience.
Dave, this is Ann.
Ann?
What about just saying that? Saying that the church has asked for a donation for us to use this space, and we'd also like to, what we'd like to do is ask for donations and give half of it to the church and give half of it to the monastery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could do. You know, as you're saying that, another thought I had was people could make a donation to the church, but then that gets awkward because then we have to see, kind of make sure the church is getting something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because we wouldn't know. Is that what you mean, Dave?
Well, just because, I mean, if nobody did that, you know, we'd have to pay attention just to make sure if nobody actually made a donation to the church,
then
we'd have to make sure they're getting something. I don't know. Any other ideas? Michael.
In some 12-step programs, they have... seventh tradition, which is donations, and then groups usually have a treasurer, and then groups can decide how much they want to give to, like, the AA central office, for example, or and do it that way, or they can and groups are self-supporting. So, and then also. I know with AA, AA makes recommendations about how much groups are giving to the like central offices and things like that. So there's a structure set up, and in that case, it's up to the individual groups, and groups usually have treasurers too.
Okay, yeah. Of course, in our case, we wouldn't want it to be up to the groups because, you know, that's not really how we set up practice. It could be up to, yeah, I feel like we need some kind of concrete guideline. Amy, did you have an idea?
I was just wondering if the donation to the church would sort of be a behind-the-scenes thing that would come, like the monastery supporting, like, rent for the place, and the donation, the request for donations of the people attending the group would be specifically for the monastery, and that I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to go. That's actually the way it is on most cases, you know, most that are out there. It's divided up like that.
Dave. This is Marie.
I think I heard Marie.
I don't really have an answer, but I'm about to be in the same situation as Tony.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I wonder too, like you know, some seasoned people come to my group and they often don't leave a donation, and I know that they participate in lots of other ways and donate and possibly are monthly donors.
Mm.
You know, so it's you can't really gauge anything about the donations, really. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true, because there's lots of ways to donate outside of the group.
Yes, they may be donating to the monastery in a big way, and then, you know, I'll also want to donate to the place where my group's going to be meeting. And, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I haven't got a clear idea about that yet either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep wondering if it might be good to have a conversation with the church and find out, you know, how much would be feel like a good amount and, you know, like that. Melinda.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward what Amy was suggesting. I think, you know, I'm remembering times when we were at Kearns, and I think there was always some strange, because Kearns would put out a basket for donations, and we'd have our basket for donations, and it's like people would be deciding which to give to. And my thought about maybe we can just sort of behind the scenes do a rent sort of arrangement, and then ask people to donate to the monastery and just have it be clearly supporting the monastery and we're paying rent rather than supporting a church.
Yeah, you know what occurred to me is that Tony could make a regular announcement saying that the situation is we're here on donation basis and a portion of what people donate will go to, you know, supporting this sitting group and a portion will go to supporting the monastery, and then, you know, we just basically give them some money every once in a while.
The church? Give the church?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of depending on what comes in.
Yeah.
Dave, it's Rebecca.
Rebecca?
This is sort of an addendum to this, but what we used to do for the church that we were using was, every so often we would schedule a working meditation morning on a Saturday morning and go and give the church a good cleaning.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
And it would be done in silence and, you know, all of that. It was really, really great practice and memorable.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, I'm going to move us on here in just a second because I want to make sure we have time to do a little exercise. Do you want to make one more little thing? No. Okay. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let me bang it around here a little bit, and we'll see where we get to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So here's the idea that I was playing around with. We've been having a conversation here for just a spontaneous theme around self-hate at the monastery, and we've been looking at like self-hate in organizing and self-hate in communicating. I thought it might be fun to look at self-hate in facilitating. And I thought the way we could do that as an exercise would be we could, you know, look at it for a second, people could talk, and we could rotate the facilitation so we can all have a chance to look at self-hate in action. You guys be up for that? Okay. So let's take a second. So if you look at your facilitation practice, what do you see self-hate's role? Where do you see self-hate playing a role in that? And also consider, you know, what's the possibility in that for you, seeing that? Is that clear? What's self-hate's role and what's the possibility in that? Seeing that, what's the possibility for your practice in that?
Could I ask a question? This is Lori.
Lori?
Yeah. The second part of that is, what is, say that again? What is the role of it?
So you can, so we're going to look at the role self-hate plays, and then seeing that, another a totally different way of saying it is what do you want to practice based on seeing that? What do you want to practice
okay.
In relationship to that self-hate?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, let's take another 30 seconds on that. Okay, so let's try it like this. We'll whoever wants to share about that can share about it. So for each person, we'll have somebody who shares, and we'll have somebody who facilitates. And so people will just volunteer for both those spots. For the sharers, let's keep in mind we've got about a half an hour, a lot of people on the call. So let's kind of try to keep the interactions fairly brief, just to give a lot of people a chance to practice facilitating, a lot of people a chance to share. So to begin, we need somebody to share, and we need somebody to facilitate.
Hey, Dave, this is Ann. I'll share.
Okay, Sequoia. Okay, we got a volunteer right here. Sequoia's going to facilitate.
Who's going to facilitate?
Sequoia.
Oh, okay. So should I just jump in?
Jump in.
So I'll keep it really short, but what I saw was basically the most recent facilitation I've done is for myself. And it feels like there can be an attitude of mind of what's the problem or what's the problem here I'm trying to solve, which I can tend to, or I can come at it saying, what's here that there's something here I want to honor and see.
So you're seeing that your most recent experience has been with self-facilitation, and you can see that you can come at it from the point of view, what's the problem, or there's something here that I want to honor.
Yeah, and I will keep it to that.
And you'll keep it to that. Great, Ann.
Only a half hour.
Okay, let's see, Amy. Amy, what are you volunteering for? Amy's going to share. Who's going to facilitate?
I'll facilitate.
Michael, great.
Okay, well, what I'm seeing is a story self-hate has around facilitation that I'm not qualified and I'm a phony and I don't have a good practice to back up being on the cushion.
You don't have a good practice to back you up being on the cushion, and you're a fraud and a phony, and that's the story that self-hate tells you about facilitation.
Yes, and what do I want to practice is acceptance for myself exactly where I am in my practice, and that I'm accepted for the fact that I'm still fairly new at facilitating, and just acceptance for exactly where I am.
So acceptance for exactly where you are, your new facilitation, and really just accepting yourself exactly as you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Ramita?
Ramita, are you sharing? Or?
What are you volunteering for, Ramita?
I'd like to share.
Okay, and Sequoia, you're next. Who wants to facilitate?
I'll facilitate. This is Jen.
Great, thanks, Jen.
Yes.
I have a sitting group and do an orientation once a month, and it seems like almost every orientation session there's one or two people there and nobody shows up for sitting otherwise. So the story that conditioning has me running is that there's something about me, there's something about my presentation of the information and the practice that's wrong or bad or not good enough. And what I need to practice, or what I've been practicing, is trusting the practice and not taking it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if I got this, you have an orientation about once a month, and it seems like when a couple of people show up for the orientation, was it that other people then are not there for the sitting piece of it for the rest of the group?
So the people come for orientation and they stay for the sitting, but they don't come the following week. That's it.
Uh-huh.
They come for they get one toe in and then they're gone.
Uh-huh. Okay, so they get one toe in and then they're gone, yeah. And so what you've been practicing is just trusting the practice and trusting. You tell me the next piece about what else you're trusting.
Not taking it personally.
And not taking it personally, yeah.
Yeah, there's another one. statement that conditioning just came up with too, that I should have kept it a key group because there were more people coming for that. And now that I do the silent sitting, it's nobody's interested. And that's
So conditioning tells you you should have kept it a key group because there were more people coming then, and now that it's silent sitting, it's not working as well, and so that's your fault.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Sequoia, and I'm looking for a facilitator.
I'll facilitate you. Bill.
Great, okay. The role of, I see the role of self-hate in facilitation with me is to keep me small and to keep me from bringing the only thing that I, let's see, how do I say this, to keep me from bringing what it is that I can bring to facilitation. And so I see the opportunity in that is to keep going all the places that self-hate tells me I can't go. And to keep
so,
that.
Okay, so what the voices are saying or what self-hate is saying is trying to keep you small and keep you from thinking that you can facilitate well. Did I get that part?
Right? And to, to just keep, let's see, it's hard to express, but to keep this person from just bringing whatever it is that she has to bring to facilitation.
Yeah, to keep whatever that you actually have to bring to the facilitation. But the possibility you see is to just keep on doing whatever it is that you need to do to be that person and to go ahead and facilitate as that person.
Yeah, to just keep going where self-hate tells me I can't go.
To keep, okay, to keep going where self-hate tells you you can't go. Good.
Yeah, I think that was it. You kind of bleeped out, but thanks.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is Chris. I can be the share guy.
Okay.
This is John. I can facilitate.
Great. Thanks, John.
Okay, great. So what I notice is I have a part of me who feels that he's not enough. And so when I get in front of the room, if he's not taken care of, oftentimes I'll get that sense that that's going on, that he's there and something needs to be done about it.
So you've got a feeling when you're in front of the room of somebody there who's not enough and that you have to take care of that person when you're facilitating.
Exactly. If I find that if I take care of him and essentially provide the things that he needs, which is what I can do, that I'm mostly just returned to the moment, and that if I allow self-hate to come in, then, you know, the next piece of it is in order to fix that, the sense that I'm not enough in some way, that I have to somehow magically become this person who can make things happen, who, you know, has to force things to have a positive outcome.
So if you take care of the person that's there facilitating, then basically you're in the moment and things go well. And if not, if you start to be the person that needs to facilitate, then in fact you have to take care of that person. That's the self-hate voices that come in and say that you're not enough.
Right. Yep. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Marie. I'll share.
This is Mickey. I'll
this is Lori.
Okay, I heard Mickey first. Lori, you're next.
Okay.
Okay, Marie.
Oh, am I sharing now?
Yeah, you're up, Marie.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand it that way. Thank you. Well, what I'm noticing about self-hate and facilitation is it doesn't exist when I'm much at all when I'm actually facilitating.
So what you're noticing about self-hate is that it doesn't exist much at all when you're actually facilitating.
Yeah, yeah, and that it does exist a lot when I'm not.
And it does exist a lot when you're not.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just a lot about, I think what it is self-hate doesn't want me to facilitate.
Hmm. So what you're seeing is that you think a lot of what that's about is that self-hate doesn't want you to facilitate.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's kind of various stories about, you know, I don't really want to put myself out there like that. I don't really want to, or I really shouldn't put myself out there like that as a facilitator in any kind of big way.
So there are stories about I don't want to put myself out in that way, or I really shouldn't put myself out in that way, in any kind of big way like that.
Yeah, and yeah, but what I notice every Monday night is there'll be whatever various level of that goes on, and then I have my meeting and meditate and facilitate. And I almost always leave it thinking this was the best 2 hours of my life this week.
So every Monday that conversation goes on, and then you meditate and facilitate, and you always leave thinking that you've just had the best 2 hours of your life.
Yeah, so that really has helped a lot, just noticing what my actual experience of it is. You know, that's helped me see that the voices are the voices.
Yeah, so seeing what your actual experience is has helped you see that the voices are the voices.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the way to practice with that is, you know, reminding myself of what my experience is and then just not being willing to give my attention to any stories about it.
Yeah, so you're seeing that what's possible is just reminding yourself of what your experience is and not giving your attention to the voices.
Yeah, so what I realize is, as you're reflecting it, is that my actual experience of a facilitation is usually I feel really centered because I need to be to facilitate, and that what the suffering part of facilitation is not about facilitation at all. It's about letting conditioning have my attention on the topic of facilitation.
Mm-hmm. So the suffering part about facilitation is not about facilitation at all, but letting conditioning have your attention on the subject of facilitation.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you, Marie.
This is Lynette Alshier.
Okay, and I think we got Lori as a facilitator.
Yes, hi.
So what I see is someone heads to the group and really loves that and is excited. And sometimes, typically about mid-group, the what I kind of call the safety patrol comes in. And that person is really looking to see if I'm following the guidelines. So if I divert from reflective listening and maybe just, you know, say something, then the safety control comes right in. And so I think the effect it has on me is that I go between two stages of one being kind of totally frozen and kind of very rote, and the other one being like, well, I'll just say these things. So
can I reflect what I'm hearing so
sure.
far?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems like that when you begin, you can go and be open and excited, and then noticing sort of midway that there's a safety patrol, I think was
mm-hmm.
how you called it, who
mm-hmm.
kind of comes in there to see whether you're facilitating right, and then what happens from that is then looking at, I kind of got lost there, but something about being frozen that you might then freeze up, and I don't know where you went from there.
Yeah, it's if I'm not doing pure reflection, then somebody comes in and goes, uh-oh, you need to do this. And so then.
So if you're not doing the pure reflection, then somebody will comment about that. About
right,
you
and
need
so
to
then
do
that's
this.
When
uh-huh.
it becomes frozen state kind of, you know, I don't think I appear frozen, but that's how I feel inside because I just want to do it right. So I think what I'm working with is where I'm at with that is I've been working with, rather than go into distress, I've been working with myself to go into just kind of amazement and kind of interest of, you know, wow, there it is, what, you know, how did that come on so quick? And just really watching whoever gets distressed and trying to turn that into more interest and amazement.
So, yeah, so then one of the responses is to get frozen if, oh, I'm not reflecting exactly. And then what you're noticing that really works better is the whole thing of going into curiosity and amazement about what is occurring, and that is a very different kind of experience in facilitating.
Yeah, much better than distress.
Much better than distress, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is David, and I'm willing to facilitate if somebody's got something to share.
This is Tony. I'll share.
Okay, Tony, go ahead.
One thing I was looking at, how self-hate comes in, self-hate and conditioning, there's a lot of conversation about how I'm not going to remember the person's words, so I won't be able to reflect very well.
Mm-hmm. So there's a conversation, the way self-hate sneaks in is that there's a conversation that you're not going to be able to remember the person's words, so you're not going to be able to reflect very well.
Right. And, of course, with all that conversation going on, it is harder to hear and remember, you know, or notice what someone else is saying when there's all this conversation about how I'm not going to be able to do it, I'm not going to be able to remember.
So with all that conversation going on, it is actually a little bit more difficult to hear what the person is saying or to, you know, to remember what they're saying.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I've been working with. One is just remembering that it's not just that 1 hour that I'm a facilitator, that to try to bring more presence to other times, not just, you know, that one time, so it's not suddenly I need to be present.
So remembering that it's not just for that 1 hour that you can be a facilitator. You can bring that facilitation to other times, so it's not just, you know, all of a sudden you need to be present for that 1 hour.
Right. And the other thing is just to keep attending to my breath, and instead of the attention going to the conversation about how I can't do it, to try to turn my attention to my breath, and that seems to really help.
So what also seems to really help is turning your attention away from that conversation and putting it on the breath.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Danny here. I'll facilitate.
This is Claire. I can share. So I'll begin sharing. I've noticed a part of me that has a checklist when I'm facilitating, the checklist around all the points that I'm going to remember and reflect, and assessing how I'm doing around that.
So you're seeing that when you facilitate, you have a checklist of all the things that you're going to reflect, and somebody's looking to see how you're doing with that.
Mm-hmm. I had a very interesting experience in my recent RLB call where it seemed like I went completely to the other end, and there was a part of me there that was really was claiming to be bored and really not paying attention.
So in your recent RLB call, it seemed that somebody went to the other side of that and was feeling really bored and not paying attention.
And the underlying piece of all of this is this the judgment of myself not doing it right. That's the self-hate piece.
So the underlying judgment of this is that you're not doing it right, and that's the self-hate piece.
Yeah. So what I want to practice with this is to be with my self as I facilitate, exactly as I am, and return to the breath.
So you see that what you like to do with about this is to when you facilitate is to be with yourself exactly as you are and to be with the breath.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alex?
Yeah, I can facilitate.
This is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
So what I see around self-hate and facilitation is sowing seeds of doubt. It kind of feels like the fundamental process.
Sowing the seeds of doubt.
Yeah, and I'm not, right now, I haven't been facilitating a group recently, so conditioning wants to make a big story about how when I do that again, how I'm going to be, you know, rusty and out of practice and not very good and all that.
Uh-huh. So it's basically laying out that, you know, you're going to be rusty, you're out of practice, and then when you finally do facilitate, that's what your experience is going to be like.
Yeah, and so what I want to practice with is remembering that all of life is practice, mm-hmm. and that being on the cushion is no different than any other kind of being present.
Uh-huh, that the being on the cushion is no different than any other kind of practice that you can be practicing and facilitating everywhere else.
Yeah, and I do have, you know, kind of direct formal practice every week with my RLB buddy,
mm.
and also to bring that attitude of mind into my life, which is, you know, I'm facilitating everybody and everything all the time.
Yeah, yeah, is that it's an attitude. That's what you're bringing with you when you interact with other people that you're facilitating all the time. Not just with other people, actually. You're just facilitating all the time.
Yeah, internally and externally.
Internally and externally, yep.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
This is Michael. I'll facilitate.
This is Tracy. I'll talk.
Hi, Tracy.
Okay, what I'm saying about facilitation and self-hate is there's someone that's just so deeply devoted and committed and knows facilitation is so good for my heart, and self-hate comes in and doesn't want to share it.
So you're, what you're seeing is that there's someone who's devoted and believes that facilitation is what you want and what you want for your heart, and self-hate doesn't want to share that?
Yeah, and I think how it's coming up is in, you know, working in some of my reflective listening buddies' calls, it's almost like what I'm noticing, how it permeates in all of my life is things that are really special to my heart. It's almost like I don't even tell people about them, and how it's coming up in facilitation is there's somebody that is even resistant to telling people about the group and putting up flyers and not so much putting up flyers but talking about the group.
So there's what you're, so there's some, there's this not wanting to share about this thing that is really important to you, and you're willing to put up flyers, and you're not necessarily willing, or you're resistant to, or something is resistant to talking to people about this thing.
Yeah, I just what I notice is when I start to bring it up, if there's not a curiosity about it, and people are starting to ask me more from a, like, judging or conditioned place, I just want to shut down and not say a word about it anymore.
So you notice that if you begin to share and people seem to inquire or respond from a conditioned place, you tend to shut down and not want to share anymore.
Yeah, and what I hear a lot is just starting to talk about other practices or other things or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I what I'm wanting to do is still stand for their adequacy and still stand firmly in the place of still wanting to share.
What you want to do is to stand firmly in that place of wanting to share.
Yes, and not be affected by what other people think.
And not be affected by what other people think.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So this is Phil, and I'd be willing to be facilitated.
This is Claire. I'm willing to be a facilitator.
Okay, thank you. Well, what I've been looking at is the lie that self-hate has been promulgating around me, which is that because I haven't facilitated in front of a group for a while, that I'm going to be out of practice and feel, it's trying to make me feel like I'm not going to be able to do it.
So you've been looking at the lie that self-hate is telling you, that because you haven't facilitated for a while, when you do get to facilitate again, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, while I haven't facilitated for a while in front of a group, because the truth is that I facilitate constantly. I facilitate me all the time. I have RLB buddies that I we facilitate with, and my practice is to be in that place of the facilitator on the cushion in my daily life.
Mm-hmm. And you can see through conditioning's lie, because a lie is focused on facilitating in front of a group, when in your daily life you do much facilitation of yourself and of other people, and facilitation is a part of your life.
Yeah, so I see what it's saying as a lie, and then the possibility is I know that is what is true. But I do it is certainly does come up. I can feel it in my body sometimes.
So you can feel this lie coming up in your body sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and then the possibility is for you to return back to what you know to be true.
Exactly. Thank you.
I think we have time for one more. Amy, you were volunteering for something. Amy's going to facilitate.
Yeah, I'll share. This is David. Anybody else?
Okay, David.
So I got a chance to actually experience some self-hate just on this call, which was not nice, but good to have the immediate experience. And that is the way self-hate seems to work with me with facilitation is to set up a standard that I am really inadequate to facilitate.
So you got to see self-hate during this call, and what self-hate sets up is a standard that you're inadequate to facilitate.
Yes, exactly. And with that, what happens is there's a huge kind of, I guess I'd call it like a mini anxiety attack where I start to sweat and I kind of begin to get a headache and I just get super, super nervous that I'm going to fail or that I'm going to be, the story is that I'm going to be exposed.
The story is that you're going to be exposed in some way, and it produces something of an anxiety attack where you start sweating and get very nervous.
Yes. And the way I'm looking at it from in terms of how I want to support myself with this is I like to really get into a space where I get into the type of relationship with the part of me who goes through that really scary and just have a relationship with him where he gets to feel looked after no matter what.
So the way you would like to support yourself in this is to have a relationship with the part of you who goes through that and gets really afraid and to focus on your relationship with him.
Yeah, seemed like there was one more piece, but yeah, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, great. I think that's our time. So, Tony, anything else we need to do before we let people go?
We have a call next Friday.
Yeah.
I appreciate everybody sending in information on their groups. Let's see, coming in.
Oh, yeah, we need, yeah, because we're getting ready to set up the website and kind of launch the next phase of the program where people can, you know, have a flyer and advertise and all that. And so anybody who, are we still missing people, Tony?
I haven't checked all of it. I haven't checked everybody off yet, but we've gotten quite a few.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we're probably pretty close to all that. So hang tight on that. Rebecca, if you wouldn't mind hanging on just a second after everybody hangs up, I'd appreciate that. Anybody, anything else we have to do before we go?
I wonder if anybody came in after I took roll. I got Phil.
Okay.
Anybody else came in?
Anybody else show up a little late? All right. Well, thanks a lot for being here tonight, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you.